Welcome to another episode of the Alpha Mind podcast, where we have amazing conversations with outstanding people from the world of trading and investing. Our guests include traders, analysts, trading and investing psychologists and coaches, writers, and an array of experts on all things trading. What we really want to get to on this podcast is clear answers to the question, what leads to great trading performance? Over the past couple of years, we have chatted with numerous guests about the things they have learnt on their own personal journeys through the markets. In this podcast, myself, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall, ask the questions, have the conversations, and go to places so that you can learn from others and challenge yourself to improve and get better. Today, we are delighted to chat with legendary trading psychologist, Dr. Van Tharp. Dr. Tharp has been coaching traders for almost four decades and was originally featured in Jack Schrager's very first Market Wizards book back in the late 1980s. As you can imagine, someone with that level of experience will provide some great input into this quest which we have to find out what leads to great trading performance. To whet your appetite, here is a short excerpt from this week's podcast.
Let's say you're trading a breakout system. The market's been in a band with a particular range. Your signal is to buy when it breaks out of the band. So it breaks out of the band, you buy, it immediately goes back down to the band, goes all the way down to the bottom, goes even a little bit below the band. Some market maker takes you out there, which is where your stop was, and then it goes ticking right back up. Then you get into victim mode, you get into anger mode, breaks out of the band again, and then starts really going up. You get madder and madder. It's two or three times your original risk from the entry point. You realize you just missed the second signal. You know, maybe it ends up 10 times your initial risk at the end of the day. Now you're really mad. You go home and kick the dog, and the dog bites you back. Welcome to the world of the victim.
Whilst our chat with Dr. Tharp focuses on trading, the learnings and lessons are human and are applicable in multiple high-performance, results-driven domains, including business, leadership, sports, music, the arts, sales, medicine, the military, and many other areas. The biggest challenge everyone faces in trading is the battle with themselves. And being able to bring the best of themselves to the moment in real time, this is the core essence of what we're trying to do at Alpha Mind. If you are serious about developing your trading performance, I would encourage you to really listen to this episode and maybe even listen twice. This podcast goes deep beneath the surface to explore topics such as human consciousness and how so many of us allow ourselves to assume the role of victim and how this can play a subtle but pernicious role in impacting our trading decisions, behaviours and performance. If you have heard some of our past episodes with traders, and in particular I would highlight the first Merritt Black episode back in 2019, and the one with Tom Catfield earlier this year, you will hear two traders talking deeply about their trading experiences and the painful feelings and emotions which these manifest periodically. This episode really links those past podcast episodes in a way which I'm sure every trader will resonate with, and which, by helping you to become more aware of yourself, can help you start to take more control of your own trading. Before we hear from our guest, we would like to mention that a big part of what we do is about arming people to be at their very best. And a big part of being at your very best is having the best tools, the best training, and the best education possible. That is why we partner with the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, as our sponsorship partner. The quality of your output will be determined to a large part on the quality of your input. The STA are one of the world's leading providers of education in technical analysis. It is one thing to learn technical analysis from a 5-minute YouTube video, but it's quite another to study technical analysis on an STA program created by some of the leading people globally within their field. If you are serious about becoming a serious trader, then learning technical analysis properly should be something you should consider. This is why we highly recommend looking into the STA Technical Analysis Home Study Course, which is an online version of the course which supports their diploma program that is delivered at the world-renowned London School of Economics. Alpha Mind podcast listeners can get a discount to this course by visiting our Alpha Mind blog page. That's alphamindblog.blogspot.com, or just Google Alpha Mind blog and go to the page link STA Home Study Course. We do hope you enjoy today's outstanding chat with Dr. Van Tharp. If you would like to leave a rating or review at the end of this podcast, then this would be gratefully received. Now on with this week's podcast.
Welcome to this week's Alpha Mind podcast. We're delighted this week to have Dr. Van Tharp with us, PhD psychologist, neurolinguistic programmer modeler, a coach for traders, literal expert in the field of trading and putting that down on paper to the extent there's a whole library of books out there about. I won't mention one book because there's just so many. So, Van, welcome to our show. It's delightful to see you. Perhaps for the benefit of the sort of audience that we have, tell us where it all began. Obviously, as a psychologist, that was your base, but you've somehow got into the trading field through your own journey, and perhaps it's worth just covering that.
Basically, I lost a lot of money twice. In graduate school, I was pretty well off, and I managed to accumulate about $20,000, and it all disappeared in about 6 months. And then around 82, I did it again and discovered you could actually go below zero in your losses. And after the second time, I decided it was probably me, and with my background in psychology, I ought to do some research on it and figure out what it was. And so it all started from there.
And of course, that then led you into, I mean, not just managing yourself, I guess, but starting to then look to how you can help others with this insight that you'd built.
Yeah, I think the first thing I did is I developed this questionnaire, which we call the Investment Psychology Inventory. Originally, I think it's the Van Tharp Profile Test or something like that now, that allows people to understand how they rate and with respect to a whole number of areas, and pretty much pegs them on their personality and everything else.
So you shifted away from being trading orientated, particularly, to more being this mentor, this coach, and perhaps discovering that was more your purpose in your early years and how it's now evolved.
Well, I have to understand, I came along the same time as Mark Douglas, and a long time ago we had a meeting, and I said that I really started this business as a result of doing A Course in Miracles. And he said he started his business as a result of reading the Seth material, which is pretty similar. And, it was almost like a spiritual journey for me. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I see it. I mean, I think my purpose for me is really connecting to my inner guidance and going with the flow. But my purpose as a training coach is really to help people wake up, to understand that the map is not the territory, to improve their level of consciousness, and through that, improve their lives, and hopefully trading is a good example of that.
And so balance, I guess, becomes a significant part of the equation in terms of you talk about trading, but you also talk about actually having balance around life becomes a significant part of what you need to remember as a trade, because I guess with trading being so immersive, you can kind of get caught in trading to the point you actually forget about what goes on with the rest of life.
Right. I like to think about it as trying to raise people, or helping people raise their level of awareness or consciousness. And so I developed a new scale that goes from, that has four levels of consciousness. The first level is kind of like things happen to me and people play the victim mode. And the second level is what I call a personal power mode. Things happen by me. I do things and they happen. And then the third level is things happen through me, which means that basically you're attaching to your inner guidance or your understanding that it's important to go through. It's really at that level is where you really get the idea that almost everything is made up. It's what a lot of religions call Maya. So and it corresponds with what Alfred Korzybski calls the map is not the territory. And what happens is when you really get I could explain it if you want to devote some time to it, but if you really get the idea that everything's made up, then you can, at the very fundamental level, you can make up anything you want to, and you just have to make sure it's useful. And That's where you begin to get into, really being awake, I think. And then the last level is things happen as you. I mean, only the great masters get that at that level. And so probably I'm not there yet. I'm not expecting any of our clients to get there.
Hearing you and Mark talk there at the very beginning, there was a lot about consciousness, and both myself and Mark, we work in this space as well. We're traders, as coaches, and we've both been practitioners on the other side of it. It's that last bit. And by the way, just for our audience who can't see what we're seeing, you're sitting there with a wonderful little model of Yoda next to you, Star Wars Yoda. And it's a great one, actually. And it does make me think about sometimes what we do, because people have said to me, it's almost a bit like Yoda sometimes, what you're trying to do. And I do say there is a force to it. A lot of people come into trading and they think there's an answer. They think there's a system. They think there's a method or a model or a technique, and they just have to learn that. And then they struggle, and they slowly realize that it's a little bit more than that. And almost the worst thing that happens to them is that they're successful to begin with, because they're going to have a wake-up call at some point. But eventually they all start to realize that actually this is beyond technique, method, that actually this is about more than mindset even. It's about yourself and bringing yourself to it and being conscious of who you are in the moment. And I wonder how much that kind of fits in with that model you were talking about, and whether that's is that the very highest level you're talking about of consciousness?
The very highest level would be where you realize that there's only oneness, that everything is all the same, and you're operating from that level, which is not a level I expect anybody, any trader to get to, or, I'm not there myself. The area, and I call it enlightenment, but the area of awakening, which is where you realize that the world as we know it is pretty much made up, then that's where I would hope most people would get when they do our coaching. So maybe since I've said that so many times, maybe I ought to explain it a little bit more. We'll start out with Alfred Korzybski's famous statement that says the map is not the territory. So if you look at what's out there in the world, we're going to say it's particles and waves. So, and we'll say most of what impinges on us are probably electromechanical waves. So let's take a 650 nanometer light wave that might impinge on the retina. Now, the first thing that light wave is going to do is it's going to hit the R cones at the back of the eye. That's going to stimulate, so we're now going from electromechanical now to a electrochemical basis. And the electrochemical basis is basically a sensation that we get, that we now have. So then we add language to it. So, and there's no similarity between the sensation you get when that stimulates the eye, at least in my opinion, and the electromagnetic wave that's out there that causes the sensation in the first place. But now you go into the eye itself, get the sensation, and then you label it and you call it red. Now, there's no similarity between red and the electrochemical sensation. So we're two steps removed now. Then you give red all kinds of meanings. It's a red light district, or red produces anger, or red produces whatever meaning you might have to the word red, you'd probably give it. And then when we get into language itself, every language that I know of, with the exception of Sanskrit, basically takes the universe and it divides it up into subject, an object, and a verb. It creates a separation of subject, object, verb that's not necessarily real. The next thing is when you name things, for example, especially a living thing, you name me Van, but I'm really not Van, I'm a process. And there's probably the process going on now is probably quite different than the process that was going on 6 months ago versus the process that's going on six months in the future. So, but when you name something, you think you know it. So, you know, I can look out my window and I'll see a lot of trees and I go, oh, there's a lot of trees out there, but every one of them is different. I mean, there's no similarity between any one of them, but I'll just look at the tree and say it's the same thing. And now people are probably saying, well, what does all this have to do with the market? Well, the market is what NLP calls a normalization. It's a process. The process is when two people get together and somehow agree on a price. And so that's the process. It's not a thing. It's an ongoing process. But we call it the market, and then we represent it by various things. Like, so the best way to represent maybe the people getting together to agree on a price would be maybe a tick chart or something like that. But then I've shown examples of tick charts, and there are a bunch of random dots all over the place. So then we go, okay, well, I want to make some meaning out of it. So I'll take this block of tick charts that occurred in 10 minutes, these dots that occurred in 10 minutes, and I'm going to give a special meaning to the open and the close and the high and the low, and then I'll turn it into a candlestick. And then you go, oh, well, look, it opened higher, and it seemed to be going up. And then you give all sorts of meanings to that. And if you can't make enough meaning out of it, you suddenly give, you need more indicators, and you give meaning to those. And then maybe at some point in time, you think you know what you're doing when you really don't. So that really comes to the phrase where I say, you can only trade your beliefs about the market. And I'm not sure there's anything objective about your beliefs. Because of science, people want to add measurement to it. When you measure it, you think it's objective, and it's not. Then another thing that comes into play is, you know, science comes up with a model that says you need to look at the parts. If you understand the parts really well, you can put the parts together and figure out how the whole works. And they also have a belief in linear causation, where something happens in time, and then that causes something else to happen. I'm really a big believer in systems thinking, and science thinking says there's a predetermined cause. You analyze all the parts, and then you can determine what happens what the whole is like. And they also make a lot of presuppositions which are not necessarily correct. Systems thinking says a lot of different things come into play. There are many causes, many things that are going on to cause any given thing that happens in the market. So I'm a firm believer in that. And we can just go back to one of my basic teachings, which says, if you want to, so let's look at three systems. You've got a trading system, which consists of a number of parts, which may not be good or accurate or whatever, but you've got a trading system. Then you've got you as a system versus how it's, which is like how you work, all the things that are involved in you and how you work. And then you've got the market as a system. So there's, in my opinion, you know, this is still where most people fall down. They don't understand that there are different market types. So first of all, you have to have a system that fits you. You're not going to trade a system if it doesn't fit you. And what will happen if it doesn't fit you is you'll make lots and lots of mistakes, where a mistake means you're not following your rules. And that's going to cause you to abandon the system, because you won't even know you're making mistakes. You're just, the system's somehow not performing well. But then you've got to realize there's at least six different market types, and time frame could make it a lot more, but there's up, down, and sideways under quiet and volatile conditions. And you know, I think I have 20 market types in my monthly update. But and what we teach in our systems workshop is that it's really easy to design a system that's pretty good for any one market type, and it's pretty insane to expect that system to work in all markets. So if you look at any good bull market where suddenly everybody's just buying and holding or whatever, or they're trading in and out and they're making lots of money, and maybe they start quitting their job and they decide to become a trader full time and they think they're a trading genius, and then the market type changes to bear and suddenly they lose all their money and they never consider that the market type changed and they didn't have the tools and facilities to work with.
Going back to systems theory, I think this is, I mean, to be honest, there's so many areas where people fall down on. You know, that is one that I come across so often where people think, I suppose almost what I alluded to at the very beginning, that there is an answer. There's just something that you learn and then away you go.
This is, you see, big money wants people to think that trading is easy. So, you know, you make a lot of money as a doctor, say, and you want to go into the market, and the market will just let you open up an account, and big money will then swallow up all the money that you invest in it, and it'll disappear in terms of fees and, you know, what the market makers get out of it and what things like the commercials will do when they trade your money. So because it isn't easy. You know, if it were easy, big money would probably make it very impossible for you to trade. All sorts of exams and everything, and then even then you'd only get to trade for them. But because it isn't easy, they make it easy for you to trade so they can get your money.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, I mean, you know, you're right. Trading has enormously low barriers to entry.
Right.
And, you know, I have this theory that, you know, you need, it's a performance activity. It's a highly skilled activity.
How many years to become a doctor versus being a trader, just go open up an account?
But this is actually my own Twitter handle. If you look at it, I've got a tweet there which gathered steam when I wrote it, which says that, you know, to be anything in the performance world, whether it's an academic or a doctor or a lawyer or a boxer or a guitarist or a tennis player, you need to spend years to become good at it. But people somehow think that they're going to open up a trading account today and be halfway to being a millionaire tomorrow, which is just the most ridiculous claim ever. If you know, almost by default, if you can make that much money trading, it must be really hard to do.
Right. Well, part of what happens with it is, if we go back to my stages of consciousness, the first level is, you know, things happen to me, stuff happens to me. Well, that's the victim mode.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have any control, stuff happens to me. And so then you'll go in and you say, well, you know, stuff happens to me, if something good can happen to me, so maybe I can find a good system. And, you know, you're looking for the good system and you want to know maybe the track record of the system. And that's because you don't realize it's your responsibility to do well. You think it's the system's responsibility. And then, of course, you make, even if it's a good system, you'll make a lot of mistakes trading it. So you won't be able to make money with it. And then you'll blame the system and, or the person who sold you the system or whatever it is.
Do you know, it's interesting because I picked up your interview over 30 years ago with Jack Schwager. I pulled out my original copy. I read something in there that it didn't surprise me at all because it's something I believe. But seeing you say it really stood out for me. And that's a belief that anyone can succeed in trading. And I believe that's true. The fact that very few people do is another factor. But do you still hold that view?
I think probably you have to change your consciousness in order to be able to do that. And whether you can do that or not, I don't know.
That's the challenge, yeah. But I mean, that's why it is so hard. Like you say, when I work with extraordinary traders, you know, that they do think differently. And whether it's, and in many cases, it is a bruising first experience that has led to them sort of almost going into themselves and trying to examine themselves and think, how did I get this wrong? I'm a smart guy. I've got to I've got to do something differently. I've got to think differently. I've got to approach this differently. And then starts the real learning journey.
Well, we work with a lot of people who are like engineers or doctors or people like that. And you know, they'll come in because they want more freedom. You know, so maybe we have a doctor and the doctor's tired of lawsuits, long hours, all that sort of thing. He's not very happy as a doctor. And then, you know, one of the experiences we have is, so my job and the way I conceive the Super Trader program is my first job is to do what I can to raise their consciousness. And I kind of measure, one way to measure that is by happiness. And you know, we have a scale that goes from minus 55, which means you're probably ready to commit suicide right now, to plus 85, which means you're really happy for no reason. And, you know, pretty much by the time people get through our Super Trader, or at least the psychological portions of the Super Trader program, they're at like 70, they're over 70, and it's a consistent score. And so you get the happy, the doctor who was unhappy and wanted to become a trader, suddenly is a happy doctor. You might think, well, you know, maybe I'll make some money trading on the side, but that's not what I really want to do. You know, I really like helping people, you know, curing people and helping people get better. And, you know, so I'm going to go back to that. But, you know, I don't care. We're making the world a better place.
Absolutely. Mark, there must be something you want to bring
in. I think this whole concept of the priority is oneself. And, you know, the management of self, the care and attention of self, the awareness of just yourself, you know, and your state, is where the ultimate edge, I think, for any performer is going to be. And it's edge that's far broader than just what you're doing in terms of you know, your performance subject matter, because of course it's far broader than that. And I think this raising one's consciousness, and I'm certainly interested, Van, we're not going perhaps too much into your giving away too much from your Super Trader, but to understand, well, what mechanisms would do you walk into to guide people to actually raise their level of consciousness to the point that, you know, their awareness is optimal for them?
All right. So the first one is you have a lot of beliefs. The beliefs tend to form a hierarchy, with spiritual beliefs being the most significant, beliefs about yourself being the next most significant. So let's just talk about beliefs about yourself. They're defined by a statement, I am, followed by a noun or an adjective. So I am worthless would be an example of a pretty non-useful belief that people might have. And so one of the tasks that we have people do is go through at least 400 identity level beliefs and run them through a procedure called the belief examination paradigm. And in that paradigm, they're asking, what happens when I have this belief? What does the belief get me into? That usually should be answered from the perspective of most of your beliefs are not necessarily held totally by you, but by different parts of you. You have lots of different parts walking around. The way I think of it is if you use the word I, it's either going to be your higher self or it's going to be a part. So when you say, I'm doing this, you know, what part of you is it? It takes a little skill, but eventually you learn to identify that. So the part of you who has that belief is the one who needs to answer the question, what does it get me into? Then after that, you go, you know, what does it get me out of? Or who would I be if I didn't have this belief? And that has to be somebody other than the part that has the belief. And you have to get at least 5 answers there. And then from those 10 answers, 5 of what it gets you into, you can get a general assessment of how useful the belief is. It's not going to be true. You know, every belief will have a little bit of utility, at least from the time it was formed. But how useful is it for you generally? If it's overall useful, you probably want to keep it. If it's not useful, you want to get rid of it. But in order to get rid of it, first thing you have to do is decide if there's any charge or emotions locking it into place, because if there are emotions locking it into place, so the belief I gave up front, which was I am worthless, you know, you don't have to do much of an assessment to decide that's not a useful belief, but it's probably locked into place by guilt, shame, fear, who knows, all kinds of negative emotions. And you have to be able to release those negative emotions to be able to get rid of the belief. You know, but once you've changed, you know, say 500 core beliefs like that, you're pretty much a different person. And in order to do that, you've released a lot of charge, which is going hanging on in your body, which is stored there. You know, let's talk about that as well, because it's also a really significant part of what the process is involved with. What happens is when you resist a feeling and don't want to feel it, then you tend to stuff it inside of you, and it doesn't get released. It gets kind of stored in your body, and then it can attach to a lot of beliefs. So let's say you have an issue with rejection. Maybe when you were early teenager, you asked a pretty girl out. She was in a bad mood and said, "Get lost. I don't want anything to do with you." And then you felt rejected. So you go, "I didn't want to go out with her anyway." And you feel really bad. And then the next time you want to approach somebody, that same sort of feeling comes up. That rejection creates a part now who says, "I don't want to ever feel this again. So I don't want to be rejected. I'm someone who doesn't want to be rejected." So it's going to look out for every scenario in which you might be rejected. And it's got the stored rejections inside your body. And every time it thinks you might be rejected, it's going to release some of that rejection. So you won't even approach the situation. Or you know, you might approach the girl and say something like, "You wouldn't want to go out with me, would you?" Which would probably get a no anyway. And then it just builds up and builds up and builds up. And you're not going to get rid of that until you release the just stored feelings in your body and then get rid of this part that doesn't want to be rejected. And you can see the kind of illogic in it, because the rejection part is formed because it doesn't want to be rejected, but all that happens in its whole experience is one of being rejected all the time. And so you get things like fear or greed in the markets. Let's say you're trading a breakout system. The market's been in a band with a particular range. Your signal is to buy when it breaks out of the band. So it breaks out of the band, you buy, it immediately goes back down to the band, goes all the way down to the bottom, goes even a little bit below the band. Some market maker takes you out there, and which is where your stop was, and then it goes ticking right back up. Then you get into victim mode, you get into anger mode. Breaks out of the band again and then starts really going up. You get madder and madder. It's two or three times your original risk from the entry point. You realize you've just missed the second signal. You know, maybe it ends up 10 times your initial risk at the end of the day. Now you're really mad. You go home and kick the dog, and the dog bites you back. Welcome to the world of the victim.
do you know what? I'm laughing because in our most recent podcast, you've almost described the trade which I described in that podcast, which I did many years ago, which ended talk about kicking the dog. I ended up driving home and getting two speeding tickets on that one single journey home. It does do that. Trading does that to you. Markets do that to you. But it's not really the market doing it to you. It's you doing it to yourself. That's almost what I'm hearing.
You say the market does it to me. You're right in that victim modality of.
Yeah.
Four traders did it to me. I mean, in my early years when I lost, I kind of thought, you know, Wall Street has a telephone line and a van maker. They know exactly what van does, and they're going to do the opposite.
Tell me, there's thousands of traders probably listening to this podcast. They're all thinking, they've got my number two. We all do it. Every trader thinks it because we're human. That's how humans roll. I think you're right. You know, there is, and almost it's that ability to move on past that we, you know, that we do see, that Mark and myself see as well with our clients. But it's, do you know what? It's as one of my clients said to me recently, because we were talking about this very same thing, and this is a guy who's been doing it 15 years, and, you know, he's had quite considerable success, but, you know, he's always moaning about how much money he leaves on the table. And when we talked about this, and he just said to me, he went, but Stephen, it's so hard. And really what he was saying is it's so hard to move past that thinking like a victim.
Right, unless you change your consciousness, which is why we work on that first.
Yeah.
I actually had basically a Super Trader 1 and a Super Trader 2 and a Super Trader graduate. And I split Super Trader 1 into two parts because about half the people could get through it. And so I split it into one part where I'm just teaching, there's like 10 lessons, and I'm just teaching some of the fundamentals of how the market works that are fairly easy to do. And so they get a good grounding in the market, but I know enough about them. There are a few hard, you know, exercises that are really into self-exploration towards the end. If they get through that, I have a reasonable belief that they can get through the next section. So then we have like 13 more lessons that have them doing all the stuff that I'm talking about, where they look at their beliefs, they release charges, they do all those sorts of things.
One of the aspects that we both meet, myself and Mark often, we traders, is that sometimes the more intelligent you are or the more academic you are, the harder it is to let go of your reliance on academia or evidence or science. And that's almost what I felt you were talking about earlier on.
Well, let's look at science, because there's some fundamental presuppositions that everybody in science has. A concept like consciousness is taboo, and the mental stuff is taboo. You get the idea that physics comes first, and then chemistry, and then biology, and then maybe psychology, and maybe then some other sciences. And, you know, they totally miss the possible presupposition of what if consciousness is the basis for everything.
It's we're getting quite profound here, aren't we, in terms of just our understanding of just what we're all about. And what we're all about is perhaps not what most people think we're all about. Yeah. This depth, the beliefs, and how we then trade the market based upon our interpretation of these beliefs, and quite a lot of them in the trading spaces we've come to learn, Steve. You know, a lot of people have guessed got bizarre beliefs and expectations that play havoc with just how they apply that into some sort of trading strategy. And I think you have to sort of get back to this bigger picture of understanding that's quasi-spiritual, that's quasi, you know, not just self, but the bits of the subconscious and beyond that we only kind of are starting to begin to understand. One of the things, Van, that in some of your work I started to notice was submodalities and how actually it was beginning to, I think you were starting to understand it was important that was how people then interpreted the market. And I mean, I think you referred to pit trading, where if you're on a floor, you know, you're analyzing the market very, very differently to perhaps if you're just looking at a chart. And actually, it was how you were starting to pick up noise on a floor and how that started to impact people's trading. And I think you were starting to look at ways in which people could optimize their trading by feeling the market perhaps differently to the way they've felt it before. You know, getting back to that awareness.
Let me tell you a little bit about modeling, at least. The modeling that I use is, if you want to know how people do things, you need to find a number of people who do it well, and then you need to find out what they do, what are the tasks involved in what they do, And then for each task, you need three ingredients. You need the beliefs, the mental state involved in doing the task, and then you need the mental strategy involved. And the mental strategy is what you were talking about there, the sequence of thinking. And so I'll give you the sequence of thinking that occurs for an action state. So, you know, one of the stages of trading is an action state where you either buy or abort or take profits. Strategy for doing that is first you need to see the signal, because you should have some sort of signal that says, if I see this, I get into the market, or if I see this, I exit, I abort, or if I see this, I take profits. So it's a known signal. So the first stage is external. You see the signal. It's visual. It's on a chart. And then internally, you've got to recognize that it's a familiar signal. So this is visual, internal, remembered. Then you've got, most people act from feelings. So then you've got to feel good about it. Oh, this is going to give me lots of profits. I feel good. And then you take action. So it's a really, most cases, it's a really simple strategy. But the average person might not come to it that way. So they might see the signal, recognize that it's the signal they should take, and then their brain goes, you get an internal chatter that says, what could go wrong? Now, if you say, what could go wrong, you don't start feeling good about it. You start running through mental scenarios of what could go wrong. And by the time you've done enough of those and got rid of them, it might be too late to take the signal. I gave that as an example, and I think the one difference was that some institutional traders, well, floor traders, of which there probably aren't anymore, always used to have a more of an auditory signal, which had to do with the noise levels and things like that. So when floor traders would realize that the floor was over with and they have to move out, they would still be applying that strategy, and it wouldn't work too well. And, you know, some of them found if it added an auditory component to the original, so maybe they saw the signal and a bell rang or something like that, then it made it easier for them to trade just because it was used to the strategy that they were using before.
Yeah, that's great. We have noticed that. And we see that often where people move from different types of trading arenas. So people move from an office to a home, or from a home to an office, or from a sell side role to a buy side role, or analyst to trading. A lot of people think it's just a simple switch. Like you say, moving from floor to screen for doing basically the same job was one of the biggest challenges that many people faced in their life, and very few people overcame it. Just coming in very quickly to remind our listeners that the Alpha Mind podcast is sponsored by the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. If you're serious about trading and you're serious about developing yourself as a trader, do look into their home study course. It is based on the diploma program which they run at the world-renowned London School of Economics. You can find out more about it on the Alpha Mind blog. Just Google Alpha Mind blog or go to alphamindblog.blogspot.com. And there you can find out how listeners to the Alpha Mind podcast can get a discount on the full cost of this online course. Thank you, and back to the podcast. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I noticed at the very beginning of your Jack Schrager interview, was that you studied stress and how that affects human performance, and I guess you've been doing that all your life. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, or at least get your opinion on, that I noted before we started today, was why is trading and investing so anxiety inducing?
Well, it's probably all of the things that we've been talking about. If you're a victim, if you've got all this, if you've got a lot of non-useful beliefs, if you've got stored feelings in there. I mean, if you have a lot of stored feelings in your body, you're very stressed. Your body is not supposed to have stored feelings in there. I was recently working with an alternative health practitioner who basically says the key to everything in health is the voltage in the acupuncture meridians. If it's not at a certain level, the body doesn't work that well. And if it gets too low, then all sorts of things go wrong from, and you've got to up the voltage. And then, so if something's wrong, you look at the voltage levels, and then you've got to look at what affects the voltage. And one of the five things that affects the voltage are emotions, and I'm sure what they're meaning are emotions stored in the body, which is what we've been talking about. So if you've got a lot of emotions stored in your body, it's going to affect your health, it's going to affect everything, and it's stressful.
And that overlays one of my favorite books about psychology, actually, which is The Body Keeps a Score by Bessel van der Kolk.
No, actually, I haven't read that book.
Okay, it's a brilliant book, and it's Brain, Mind, and Body in the Healing of Trauma. So it looks at trauma victims. And I've been listening to that book for quite a while and rewinding it and replaying it on Audible. And it's almost like when I'm listening to the book, and I know they're talking about people who have serious trauma, it's almost like trading is just a series of mini traumas, or it builds upon these mini traumas that we hold within our body. And it just almost seems to accentuate them.
Right, but it's only if you're on a low consciousness level. If you're operating on the victim level, I mean, even on the personal power level, it's pretty easy to fall back in the victim level. And you can look at American politics just to see that. This country is about as divided as it's ever been. And they're all, it's all this division between victim thinkers who go one way or the other. Maybe 75 to 80% of the population are in the victim modality.
Do you know what? Do we see the same thing in trading then with a lot of new traders? They come into it and it taps into their victimhood. You know, they start trying to trade, they lose money, they can't make money, and they're looking at, unfortunately, they're looking at all these, which are really usually BS stories being put out on Twitter, or, salespeople, brokers, how much money is being made. And of course, they can't check it. They're just reading that, and it makes them feel like a victim almost of the market.
You got it down. That's it.
I think you're absolutely right. The the level of I guess, my ability to cope and to have an agility of mind to recognize that you're kind of on a journey and this is a learning game, and knowledge is important on the journey, and don't forget about the education process. But so many people just don't bother, and so the recipe and the equation is there for them to become a victim pretty early on, and then be wrapped up with the consequence of that on their stress, on their level of awareness will guess collapse, because of course under stress your awareness of anything just collapses, and thus your opportunity to make money in the market is significantly reduced, and it just becomes a vicious circle.
Probably at least 75% of the population falls under the victim level of consciousness.
You started trading as a young man, a little bit like all of us. We all start with a few trades. They either go right and then go wrong, or they go wrong and then they never go right. There's a wet, warm path. And nearly everyone has some sort of uncomfortable experience within their first or second year. There is no university of trading. It's not the sort of thing where you can go and do a degree in trading. But the sort of programs that you're offering, the Super Trader program, people are often reluctant to invest in programs like that and in services such as that myself and Mark offer. And it almost seems like that is the antidote. It's quite a strange scenario where people won't invest in making themselves better at what they do, but they will quite happily maybe buy a system that's completely unproven. In a sense, how do we as an industry get that message out there to people? How do we change that mindset? Or is it just something that's too deeply ingrained in the mindset, in the Western cultural mindset?
Well, I'll give you an example. I think this will answer your question, probably not the way you want it answered, but I have a friend who runs, who is one of the managing directors of one of the top brokerage companies in India. And he set me up with a talk. I gave a talk. And then he set me up with an interview with a local TV station in the morning. And I said, well, you know, I'm assuming perhaps they'd be a little bit more humble in India than people who would be in the States or the UK. And, you know, they might be willing to listen to what I want to say. You know, and the interview started out and it was like, you know, well, what, you know, the oil seems to be going up these days and a lot of institutional traders are doing this or that. And, you know, and what do you think of that? And, you know, and if this happens, how do you think it'll affect the average investor in India? She asked four or five questions like that. And I said, look, you have an opportunity to talk to one of the top coaches in the world. I can give you some really useful information. Let's stop this. And I can give you an idea of the kind of questions you should ask me. And then we'll see, you know, then we'll go from there. So we stopped, explained some of the things, and then we went back to our interview, and she started asking the same sorts of questions again. And look at newsletters. So I get lots of ads from newsletters, so for trading newsletters, and they're either showing you great examples of how, you know, if you'd taken this trade, you'd be up 3,000%. And if you'd taken this trade, you'd be up 2,500%. And if you'd taken this trade, you'd be up 200%. You know, and people look at the trade as if that was their whole account, of course. And then, so that's the greed side. And then the other side is, you know, this comes out all the time. It's like the government is going to take away your retirement savings. I think the latest ones were focusing on the dollar being outlawed, basically, and that the government would institute its own cryptocurrency where it was a centralized cryptocurrency and they had control over everything and they could control your bank account, which means, you know, if they wanted to go to negative interest rates, you couldn't withdraw your money. They could just start charging negative interest rates. So if you had money in a bank, you know, your account would be losing money all the time because of negative interest rates. And, you know, that's what the newsletters focus on. So between the media and the newsletters, you know, what can you say? That's what the average person pays attention to. So my approach is I write, you know, I used to be afraid of putting all the psychology stuff out there because I thought that was our big secret. But then I wrote a book called Trading Beyond the Matrix. We actually give that away. Nobody's interested in our Super Trader program. They can still contact the vantharp.com and get a free copy of that book. Have to pay postage to the UK, I'm afraid. But, you know, but the book, you know, the book's free. And, you know, that's kind of our screening mechanism. I don't want people in the Super Trader program who haven't read that book because, you know, if you've read that book, then you have some idea what you're getting into.
It's interesting because we've got a growing audience and, you know, just today someone tweeted that they've listened to every single episode at least twice. I think people are realizing that this is the secret. This is where the source lies to them succeeding in this game, to look beyond the surface and see that actually the answers lie beneath.
Yeah, I think you don't get to the enlightened stage of consciousness. You know, I can explain how it's all made up, which I kind of did earlier in the podcast, but you really got to get it experientially, you know, that it is all made up. And by that time, you've also, I mean, you could say, oh, that's a formula for crime and everything else, because then you're going to make up all your rules and you're going to make up things that are hurtful to everyone else. But no, by the time you get to that level, you're following your purpose in life, which is something at a very high level.
Do you have any examples, obviously without naming names, of where you've seen this transformation occur to people? They've been through this journey of consciousness, they've been struggling, getting by, and then suddenly, I mean, you've been doing this for, I guess, 3+ decades now, I guess nearly 4 decades. You must have seen some great examples of that.
I think we have some pretty good examples that are on YouTube now.
Yeah.
I do a webinar sometimes on Mondays. And I've interviewed some of our super traders who've gone through transformations. One good example is a Chinese woman who, I mean, I think she was at one point was an analyst for Citibank, and her background was very, you know, scientific, linear causation, analyze everything to death, and you know, now she's almost psychic in her abilities of, you know, she learned photo reading, for example, and got to the point where she had got skills out of photo reading that I can't even imagine. But I think pretty sure there's, her name is Ray Lau, and I'm pretty sure there's a web, if you look up Van Tharp's YouTubes, there's several of those, you know, out there.
Yeah. See, that, I mean, that's a great story and that's a great example. And, you know, we'll put the details of how to get onto that on our on the podcast page. It just reminds me of something we've spoken so often about on our podcasts over the years, that in a way it is a form of financial alchemy, but it's not using numbers. It's using what's going on inside you. It's using your consciousness and the journey into that. And that's the secret, really, to this game.
Yeah, and, you know, you asked me about examples, but I can't really detail someone else's experience.
Yeah.
I'll just give a few things that I remember, which is kind of what I did.
Yeah.
But I'm getting older. I have my memory's more and more fallible, but I just figure that pretty much shows that everything's all made up.
So, I mean, I guess on that last point, I mean, I guess resonates so much for me as being a pit trader in the early 80s in London, having arthritis, having massive amount of stress, and getting some maternal guidance about my grandmother having a great interest in healing. And that then opened up a doorway for me to start looking at meditation and mindfulness and that sort of, that level of self-management. And I can absolutely say that increased awareness, increased sensitivity, a greater sense of consciousness. And it was kind of a Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, suddenly realizing that the world isn't black and white and 2D. It's kind of super colorful. It's HDMI and it's 3D. And I think you can achieve that sense of awareness through this. And I love that point you made about the voltage level of the acupuncture points and sort of understanding where you may be depleted, and that there is a toolkit out there. There is an ability to actually change yourself and to elevate yourself and commit to a journey where actually you can ultimately achieve a greater sense of purpose, a greater sense of consciousness. And actually when you start to look at this in terms of trading, actually, from what you've said today, that this element, well, what are the traits of a great trader? Well, you know, calmness, the sense of positivity, you know, just tuned in, and an awareness of self, and I guess that sort of ability to question beliefs and ask the question about just how you're applying beliefs and how they may just be messing you up and by having the wrong beliefs.
If you ask somebody the question, so say you ask the average person, you could have anything in the world, what would it be? And they might go, well, I want £1 million. And then you ask the question, well, if you had that, what would it get you? And then they say, well, you know, I could be able to buy this, this, and this. Well, you know, what would that get you? Well, I'd feel more secure. All the security, what would that get you? Well, then I might feel more peaceful and happy. Well, what if you could get peaceful and happy first? Because that's what works. You know, that's why you're doing everything. But people don't realize that they just want the £1 million or whatever.
They want quick and easy.
Right.
They don't want to do the hard work. This has been wonderful. Van, how can people find out more about you? People who are serious about developing themselves, where can they find out about you and your work?
Well, it's vantharp.com, so really simple. On there, there's a number of free things, such as I write a monthly or weekly newsletter, including a monthly update on the markets and a monthly update on cryptocurrencies. It occurs each. I like cryptocurrencies a lot. And then, the Trading Beyond the Matrix book, as I said, is free for postage. And there are a lot of YouTube channels and that sort of thing. And, I'd recommend, people want to get involved with the Super Trader program, but they do a few of the other things first, because we don't offer money back guarantee. We offer probably the best money back guarantees in the world on almost any workshop or anything we do, but we don't offer money back guarantees on the Super Trader program because we want people to know the quality of what we do and that sort of thing before they start.
Van, it's an absolute privilege to have you on the show and facing what is a very, very large audience that are paying attention to people that have, great experience and a care for, their impact on others. There's a lot of people in this space that don't care what their, what the consequence of their advice will be to others. But clearly you have a sense of consciousness and care that is measurable, and I think we're grateful, and we're very grateful that you've shared so much with us today. So we end by wishing you well, and we hope that certainly you get an increased audience from the people that we face. So thanks again, Van. Been a pleasure.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening today, and we hope you enjoyed and got something out of this podcast episode today. And if you did, we would really appreciate it if you could go on to the ratings or review page of whichever podcast service you use and leave hopefully a favorable rating and a pleasant review about the Alpha Mind podcast. We do enjoy bringing these to you. We get a lot of pleasure from it. We hope you get something out of it. If you want to know more about us and our service, do look us up on alpha-mind.net. You can also go onto our blog page, alphamindblog.blogspot.com. You'll find articles, past articles, links to past podcast episodes. You'll also see connections to pages where you can get a discount on the STA home study course. And again, thank you to our podcast sponsor, the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. You can also find a discount code for the Trader's Mind Journal on there, which is a product we spoke about on our podcast a few weeks ago. Please also do feel free to connect to us. If you're interested in our services, in our coaching services, in our coaching programs, you can look up more details about those also on the blog page or contact us info@alpha-mind.net and we can tell you more about them. Or do contact myself or Mark directly on Twitter. My handle is @AlphaMind101. Mark's handle is @AlphaMind102. Or you can connect with us and contact us through LinkedIn. Again, if you're interested to know more about our work. As a reminder, we work with individual traders, both on the sell side and the buy side. We work with retail traders, investment bank traders, energy firm traders, traders in hedge funds and asset management firms. We also work with people connected to the trading world. We are executive coaches. So we work with leaders and managers and teams within businesses, helping to make the businesses more effective and more productive. One last thing, we do have a newsletter, and there's good information about us. Always a useful article on there, links to previous episodes. So you can subscribe for that also on the Alpha Mind blog page. Finally, that just leaves us to say thank you once again, and we wish you the very best of luck in the markets.